The Blue Jackets cling to their playoff spot. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome to After the Score from WOSU Public Media. I'm Steve Brown here with Thomas Bradley. This week we'll update our NCAA brackets, which after 63 tournament games are tied.
And we'll hear from OSU Athletic Director Gene Smith, who had some interesting things to say about paying college athletes.
But first, the Blue Jackets are still in the playoffs. But with this being Columbus and how tight the Eastern Conference is, that could easily change. It's a brutal home stretch for the Jackets, but they still hold the tiebreakers. For more on the season's final week, we caught up with Columbus Dispatch beat reporter Aaron Portsline. Aaron, after Tuesday night's loss, you called it the bank job. So explain exactly what happened. For people who didn't watch the game, what transpired at the end?
Yeah, well, the Blue Jackets are up 2-0, and everything looks great. Looks like a big win over a very good team in the West. And then everything falls apart, if you will. In soccer, they would be called own goals. They went in off of their own player into their own net. Three of them, in fact. It's 2-1, goal off Nick Foligno. It's 2-2, goal off of Brandon Dubinsky and Dalton Proud, and then into the net. And then in overtime, just for good measure, it goes in off Jack Johnson into his own net. Blue Jackets lose 3-2. I think devastating loss, but we'll see with the next seven games.
What are the chances of something like that even happening? Does that ever happen?
It well, three in a game, I've never seen. I've never seen three in a game. I've covered probably close to 1,000 NHL games in person. I've never seen that. Blue Jackets president of hockey operations, John Davidson, has seen almost 4,000 games. He's never seen it. They do happen. Those goals, they go in off. I mean, it's such a quick, bouncy, fluky sport anyways. It happens maybe once a month, the puck goes in off somebody. Maybe it happens five times in a season. Never seen three in one game.
Well, the old saying goes, throw it in front of the net and something good will happen. And that was just exaggerated to the 10th degree.
Yes. And the first one, you could almost feel that, oh, my God, are we snake bitten? The first one from behind the net in the corner goes in front of the net, hits Nick Foligno in the shin guard, and goes in. But from a guy who's never scored, I think he scored one goal in his NHL career. Total fluke, right? And then it begins to snowball.
It seemed like a very Blue Jackets thing to happen.
Yes. This team has, any team that's lost mostly for their first 13 years, they seem to find new ways to lose.
Yeah.
Columbus has done that. And you know what? As much as they're bad bounces, for sure, this team has to find a way to win a big game against a big team. It can't just be, woe is me, bad bounces. Look at their record against the elites in the league this year. Not good. They don't have a marquee win yet. Did they deserve to win last night? Sure. But they didn't drop the hammer in the second period. I don't think they played as well in the third period as they did in the second. They didn't deserve that loss, but they also didn't play themselves out of being in that precarious situation.
Well, let's talk about the positives there. They did manage to get it to overtime and pick up one point. Dallas scored five goals and shut out Washington, who they're competing with Washington for that last wild card spot. So there were some good things that came out of last night. And we've got a couple games going forward, Thursday night at Philly and Friday at home against the Blackhawks. How important are those two games?
Well, I think what makes last night so devastating is that these next two games are really tough setups for Columbus. They have never won in Philadelphia. Think about that. Pause for dramatic consideration.
they were in different conferences, but still.
They've never won in Philadelphia.
They've played in Philadelphia quite a few times, I'm sure.
This six times, 0-5-1, okay? The last two have been particularly brutal. This year, up 3-0 going into the third, gave up five goals in the third period, lost 5-4.
That's so Blue Jackets.
Devastating. And then, you know, so that's tough, and Philadelphia's playing really, really well right now. Then they come home the next day to play Chicago, which is one of the elite teams in the league. Chicago's kind of going through what Pittsburgh's going through right now, where they've obviously got a ton of talent, but they've got a ton of injuries as well. And they're not playing particularly well. Some see them as vulnerable. Columbus, big week this week. 2 points last night would have looked so much better going into this really difficult back-to-back. But can they, you know, they're going to be inspired to play well in Philadelphia, having such a tough time there before. Can they beat Chicago? Of course they can. This is a really tough week. 2 points would have been huge last night.
It was a good turnout at last night's game. More than 16,000 people there.
Yep. Yeah, and you can see it starting to build. We ran numbers in the paper last Friday, their first 18 home games. They averaged about 13.3 in attendance, and then their most recent 18 games, they'd averaged 15-some. Last night was well over 16, so the increase continues.
Let's talk about the crossover between some of the Flyers players we're going to see on Thursday night and Blue Jackets players. Steve Mason, yeah. Is he going to be starting a net for the
I would assume. I don't know yet. That hasn't been determined yet. I would assume that he will. He's had a really, really good year. Jake Voracek there, of course, as well. Former right. Blue Jacket. He's having a great year.
Aaron, I guess one more question for you. Do you still think the Blue Jackets make the playoffs at this point?
I think they do. Yeah. Right now they're the eighth seed. That would be, I would think, problematic. First things first, of course, making the playoffs. That puts them in line to play Boston in the first round, which is a really tough matchup. I think the reason I'm still favoring them making the playoffs is because the other two teams that they're battling with haven't quite figured this thing out. People think Columbus is having a tough go. Toronto has lost eight in a row. They just won last night to snap that. Washington is all over the map. They played really well out west to sort of get themselves back in it. Got beat 5-0 at home last night by Dallas. So Columbus is right there. I don't trust Toronto. I don't trust Washington. I think they're okay. I think if they have seven games left, I think if they go 4-3, they're in, which seems fairly attainable. But if Toronto or Washington figured out, it could take more than that. But, yeah, I think they're in.
What are the chances they can sneak, steal a game against Philly, and get into one of those non-wild card spots?
Well, that's going to be tough now. I mean, if obviously tomorrow night's game really is going to determine if they have any chance of finishing second or third in the conference. Or the division, sorry.
Thursday's game, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Thursday in Philadelphia. And the way this works, they're in the Metro Division. The second and third place teams will play each other. The worst wild card team, the last wild card team, the number eight seed, will play the team with the best record,
the
which
Bruins.
Right now is Bruins. It's going to be the Bruins. So for Columbus, to get seven would be great because they play Pittsburgh. I shouldn't say great. Better than Boston. Ideally, they want to be in this 2-3 spot. But if they lose to Philadelphia Thursday, I would say pretty much all hope of that is gone.
Aaron Portsline covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, thanks as always.
My pleasure.
Among the people weighing in on the National Labor Relations Board's ruling that football players at Northwestern University can unionize is OSU Athletic Director Gene Smith.
The ruling isn't a blanket one and doesn't apply to OSU, but Smith still made some interesting points on WOSU's All Sides with Ann Fisher this week. He says he supports some overhauls to the athletic scholarship model that he says is old.
Because we do not provide anything above and beyond the direct expenses. We do not provide cost of attendance. If we go and recruit a talented violinist, we offer them a full ride scholarship, which is room, board, books, and tuition, plus whatever the institution defines as cost of attendance. Here at Ohio State, it's about $3,700, $3,800. And that takes into consideration laundry costs, personal care, travel to and home, from here and home, X number of times a year, so it's cost of attendance. At Stanford, it's probably higher, because you're on the West Coast in Palo Alto, I think it's like $6,700 at Stanford. So what we need to do is change that scholarship model.
How would you change the model?
Well, it's legislation. So,
but I mean, in what way? Is it the model, or are you talking about changing the amounts?
Both. So you change the model, so your scholarship now becomes a base scholarship plus cost of attendance. So that changes the model to include cost of attendance, which changes the amount. Okay. So now, one of the pieces of legislation that's being considered is to go up to $2,000 in cost of attendance. So now, on top of everything else you're getting another $2,000. So that's one of the issues that's being discussed nationally. And then there's a lot of other issues. For example, health care. We cannot provide health care insurance for student athletes. However, at Ohio State, if you get injured, say, in your senior year, you have surgery, and you leave for 2 years and go work on the West Coast, and you have another surgery as a result of that injury, we pay for it. We'll work with you to pay for it. But a lot of schools don't do that.
Well, okay, we know a lot more about the damage that can come from the high-impact sports like football.
Yeah, same with gymnastics.
A lot more gymnastics, any of them.
Any of them.
Right. Joint, long-term joint problems, anything like that. Who takes care of them long-term?
Well, it depends. Like at Ohio State, if they have an injury that they incurred here, then when they have recurring issues with as a result of that injury here, we take care of them. Now, again, there's 351 Division I schools. Everybody doesn't do that. Your top schools that generate revenue like we do, we have programs in place. Another example to the graduation point is we have a degree completion program. So when a student athlete leaves early, they're maybe 24 credit hours short, and they want to complete their degree, they come back, we pay for it.
Even though they've gone off to the NBA
doesn't
or
matter.
The
Greg
NFL.
Oden, Michael Conley, all those guys, when they come back to school, Michael Redd just retired. You know, he's a multimillionaire, but we still pay for his tuition to complete his degree. A lot of schools don't do that. So what the Kane Coulter and the union initiative is trying to do is get everybody to do those type of things. And so there's a lot of schools that already do what they're talking about.
Smith went on for a few more minutes before flat out saying he supports paying at least some college players.
I'm not a proponent of turning them into employees where you actually pay them a paycheck. I'm more interested in trying to find ways to give them more money in a different model.
So he is somewhat straddling the fence there with that answer by saying he doesn't want to make college athletes employees, which is actually exactly what the NLRB ruling said they are, at least at Northwestern. I am a little surprised, Thomas, that he was as pointed as he was, that he came right out and said he supports at least some type of compensation.
He does support compensation for athletes, and he doesn't want to make them employee. The biggest things he brought up were, you know, cost of living, cost of attendance. If you have to put all your time being an athlete at Ohio State and you don't have time for a part-time job, where are you going to get money to be a normal person?
Yeah. Yeah, if you can't get it from your parents, it's hard to get it in a non-illicit fashion. Gene is a former athlete. He was a defensive end at Notre Dame, so it does make some sense that he would at least sympathize with the players. Archie Griffin as well has been another outspoken. He normally, all respect to Archie, he's kind of a cheerleader for OSU most of the time, but I was a little surprised at how strongly he came out, even more strongly in favor of paying players than Gene did.
He did. His son is a football player at Ohio State. He, of course, was a two-time Heisman Trophy winning running back at Ohio State. So these guys probably know what it's like to be a college athlete. They know what it's like to have to get by putting, you know, how many hours a week at practice, then at school, and then whatever else they have to do for their commitments and not be able to get compensation for that.
So you have guys like Archie Griffin, guys like Gene Smith coming out in favor of this. And I think all this, it really shows the massive sea change that I've seen, that I think I've seen in college sports. Of course, the NCAA doesn't support the Northwestern ruling. They've came out and flatly said so, and I seriously doubt they want to pay college athletes at all. But most other people seem to. This seems to be a movement really gaining momentum.
We've talked about it before, how this ruling at Northwestern is going to lead to a lot more things. And how much power is the NCAA going to have in 10 years? They have all these restrictions and rules that basically want to keep college athletics amateur. And we're moving to a point where amateurism in college athletics is going away.
Also on All Sides with Ann Fisher alongside Gene Smith was a law professor and economist from Duke University who's written a book about big-time college sports. And he really got at the point that, according to him, there should be a difference in pay between star athletes and, say, the women's field hockey team.
He was talking about athletes being able to profit on their own stardom. And if we're being frank and we're living in the real world, you know, college football players at Ohio State have more stardom and more to gain off their name than a college lacrosse player at Ohio State or even a football player at a small school like Ohio University. Not necessarily a small school, but a small program has a lot less to gain off their stardom than someone from Alabama or Auburn or Ohio State or Florida, those bigger schools. So he was talking about there are different scales and there are different degrees of how much you can make off your name or how much your name is worth.
That's a pretty radical change, it would seem like, from now. That's a pretty free market flip, almost a 90-degree turn from where we're at now.
Pretty long way down the road, but we're not at it right now.
Mm-hmm. Thomas, for all the smack talk you and I did leading up to the NCAA tournament, we're now tied going into the Final Four.
We are tied, and
you have a chance of making a lot more points than I do.
I'm going to win because I have my team still in it. You picked Kansas to win it all.
That was a great pick by me, right?
Well, they lost to Stanford in the second round.
What was worse, that or me having Duke in the Final Four?
I had Duke in the Final Four too, man.
Oh, I don't feel as dumb then.
Duke's one of those teams that is either going to, you know, win it all or lose to
Mercer.
Lose to Mercer.
Who else? They lost to Lehigh a few years ago in the as a second seed.
They lost to VCU when I was in high school before VCU was even a thing.
That's true. But VCU is a thing now. Anyway, the current Final Four. Florida is the only one that's not really a surprise. Connecticut, Shabazz Napier is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Yep. He is fun to watch.
Forget the seeds going into this tournament. The names are what made the Final Four this year. UConn was a 7 seed. They played better than a 7 seed the whole tournament. Kentucky was an 8 seed. They were preseason number one.
They are the best recruiting class of all time.
Of all time. So those guys grew up real fast, and mm-hmm. they became the players they were meant to be all season, and they came out of the toughest region. They're an 8 seed. 7 seed, Wisconsin, a solid team that all the sabermetrics or whatever you want to call it for basketball, they really liked Wisconsin's offensive efficiencies and defensive efficiencies. They made it to the Final Four. And Florida, who was the clear number one in this tournament, they rolled their way past Dayton.
Were you sad to see Dayton lose?
I was so happy to see Dayton lose.
Why do you? You don't like Dayton?
I don't like Dayton's attitude. Dayton, after they beat Ohio State, they rioted in the streets. They declared they were the University of Dayton.
That was pretty funny. I found that funny.
If you found it funny, I found it like, okay, we get it. You won the first round of the tournament, and you're rioting in the streets. Then they win their second game, and they start like burning couches, and the president of the university started crowd surfing across campus. Like, you made it to the, like, okay, they made it to the Elite Eight. Congrats to them. They job well done. Act like you've been there before. They haven't, so I guess they don't know how to act.
Wow, look at Thomas. He is upset.
Okay, back in the 50s, Dayton won a national championship, but it's been a long time for Dayton, and I didn't like their arrogance.
I liked it. I was fine with it. Wichita State, Kentucky, mm-hmm. by far the best game I've seen this tournament.
It's up there. I would combat that with Kentucky, Michigan, but Kentucky's been in all the best games this tournament. Kentucky's games have been really close, and they've won all their games by about an average of 3 points. So they've been involved in very close games across the wire, and the fact that they're in the Final Four today is well deserved.
Where do you see these games going from here? Florida, Connecticut. I think the safe money is on Florida, but Connecticut's hot. Who do you have there?
I have Florida because I have Florida winning it all, and I picked them in the beginning. If I'm looking at it from what I've seen in this tournament so far, Florida's been shaky, but they've been able to hold off late pushes from teams, and I think Florida has the talent, the senior leadership, and the 3-point shooting to take care of UConn. I do have Florida in that game, even if I'm not going by my original bracket.
On the other side, Kentucky, Wisconsin.
I don't see anyone beating Kentucky.
You think Kentucky stays hot?
I think Kentucky stays hot. I think Michigan is a much better team than Wisconsin, and Kentucky took care of Michigan with an incredible 3-point shot from a freshman. So going into this Wisconsin game, who barely snuck by Arizona, I think Kentucky and Florida will be our national championship game. And I think Florida wins. It would be gross. But honestly, unless you're a Kentucky fan or a Florida fan, either of those results are kind of gross.
What is this going to do to the SEC complex that all those people in the South already have? They already think the SEC walks on water when it comes to football.
When it comes to football, the SEC does walk on water.
They do, but it's awful. But what do you think? Is the SEC a really good basketball conference now? Are they a dominant basketball conference?
I think they're very top heavy. Look at who's the third best SEC team?
Tennessee, maybe?
Exactly. An 11 seed. Kentucky and Florida are very good, and Florida has its up years and its down years. In 2007, Florida was national champions, but then they've had years where they've missed the tournament. Kentucky has always been consistent, always will be consistent with their recruiting methods of encouraging one-and-dones. Kentucky will be on top of the SEC for a long time to come, but I don't think SEC activists are going to be like, look at how good our conference is, because the bottom of it is the worst of basketball.
That will do it for this week's edition of After the Score. Be sure to listen next week when I will almost certainly have to eat crow and concede defeat to Thomas in our bracket challenge.
Remember that next year, Steve. You can always find the show on iTunes and on the WOSU Public Media mobile app.
You can also follow us on Twitter at After the Score. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley.